God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would love to welcome you, and you can raise your hand virtually or wave at the screen.
You can unmute too and say hello if you like.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Khaki. I'm an alcoholic and I'm 2 days sober.
Hey, Khaki.
All right.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Hello. Hi, I'm Eric. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Eric.
Hello, Eric. Welcome.
Welcome. Glad you're here.
Evan, alcoholic. I am a week sober today, actually.
Welcome.
All right, Evan, welcome.
Glad you're here. Awesome. Yeah, and I believe, at least for the moment, everyone's able to use the chat to everyone. If you'd like to share your number for the newcomers, that would be great. Anybody else I missed? All right, well, thanks for speaking up, guys. We're really glad you're here. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open Big Book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage y'all to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing steps 8 and 9, part 1, and please help us welcome our panel. Tonight, we have Alan and John. And I will read the first paragraph, which tonight is on page 76. And then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. So I'm gonna get that pulled up for everyone to see. All righty. Page 76. Now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of all persons we had harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. And John has kindly volunteered to go first tonight. And John, you should be able to unmute yourself when you're ready.
Hey, everybody. I'm John Sewich. I'm an alcoholic. I'm from Titusville, Florida, and originally from West Millington, New Jersey. And it's I just want to say it's an honor to be here to speak at your group. And, you know, David spoke at the firing line Friday, and just I was saying at the beginning of the meeting what an amazing job he did. And he started off his share, because I believe he was doing 8 and 9, too, if I remember right. And he started off his share with this description of powerlessness that just, it was so simple and just so effective, and it just hit me right in the heart, man. And what he said was, you know, once I start, I can't stop. And once I stop, I can't stay stopped. And if I got those two things right, I got a problem I can't solve. And, you know, that describes my alcoholism to the T. It describes pretty much alcoholism to the T. And, you know, that's the kind of trouble I was in. You know, I couldn't stay stopped. I couldn't separate from alcoholism. And, you know, I had to find the power greater than myself. And it took a while to get to step 9. You know, I suffered miserably before I finally met some people, you know, that really, you know, had the message of depth and weight, and then were armed with the facts about what was wrong with me. And, you know, the old Cario, John, are you or aren't you? And he'd back it up with Bill's story, more about alcoholism, chapter to the agnostics, working with us. They would go through, they would jump through each page, and he'd reference every page with another page. And if I asked a question, he'd prove it to me with another page. And, you know, that's the kind of recovery and people I had to find. And that's the kind of people I find now on Zoom every day at every meeting I go to. And I got sober September 23rd of 1991. And back then, it was don't drink, go to meetings. You're going to be all right. Don't drink today. Go to a meeting. And, you know, I'm sitting there just covered up with the bedevilments and the untreated alcoholism and just suffering, ready to really to put the bullet in the chin, you know. And, you know, thank God I didn't. Thank God there was people who reached out to me. So that's a little bit of my story. And I know we only got an hour and there's two people, so I don't want to take up a whole lot of time. And, you know, I had to get right with God in step 1s, 2s, and 3s. And once I did, I had to get right with myself in 4, 5, and 6, and 7 and look at life from an entirely different angle. And, you know, realize that my defects of character were so powerful, they had the power to kill me. And, you know, I needed God to remove these things from me. And when I was willing to do that, I had to become willing, you know, to clean up my past. And David made a statement that really I never heard before, is that the way 8 and 9 is set up is that, you know, I get my list from steps 4 and 5, you know, to some people I weren't resentful for, but the way it's set up, you know, if you go through the stories here, you know, the first things are about resentments, and the second is about fear, and the third is about the sex inventory. And it's broken down that way, you know, throughout the chapter. I never realized that way. And I thank you for that, man, because that's, I don't know if I explained it quite right, but that really hit home with me. And, you know, step 8 is to become willing. You know, I had to become willing. And if I wasn't willing, I had to pray, you know, for the willingness. And there's a nice little prayer that Howard Eber came up with. He's got all kind of handouts in the International Big Book Study, and he's very thorough. And we just got done doing step 8. And, you know, God, please remove my fears and show me your truth. Show me all the harms I have caused with my behavior. And Lord, make me willing to make amends to them all. Amen. So if I'm not willing to go to these people, you know, I pray until I am. And, you know, they break it down into two parts, you know, the logistical part, if you will. You know, with, you know, these, when I got sober, I never heard of amends cards. You know, Chris is our sponsor for me and Al. We're like his crew, you know, so, and, you know, just very knowledgeable. And, you know, I asked him to be my sponsor a couple months ago, and, you know, I just went through a whole spiritual tune up with him, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, you know, and it's just done wonders for my spirit. And, what I want to talk about for just a few minutes is just, you know, the spiritual preparation, and that's pretty much it. And I'll throw it over to Alan for, you know, for the logistics, the cards, and, you know, we use 3x5 cards to, you know, keep our amends in order. And, you know, with that, I think, you know, it's been a couple minutes here, and, you know, I'll toss that over to Alan, if you will. And, you know, you can talk about, you know, the cards and, you know, what we do to, you know, to set up the amends call, if you will. Thank you.
Thanks, John. Alan.
Okay. Hey, everyone. I'm Alan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Alan.
And, thanks, John. Thanks for the lead in. And thanks to Simple Actions and David. Really appreciate it. David, I was on that meeting on Friday as well. And and it was good preparation for this. You know, I'm grateful to be here. Just, you know, for the new people, because there are some new people on here, I just, you know, like explain like where we are. You know, we're in the middle of the book, we're on step 9. And if you have 2 days or you have a couple of weeks or something, you know, you're probably a little confused. So my sobriety date is December 13th, 2013. And I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. It was my second attempt at getting and staying sober. And I really hadn't done any work the first time. So by the time I came back here in 2013, I was all in. And I was all in because I had done a lot of damage. And inside, you know, I had that broken spirit. You know, it was all darkness. There was nothing good. You know, I felt suicidal. You know, and one of the things that I really wanted more than anything when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous is I wanted to fix things in my life. Like, I wanted to repair things. My mom had died while I was in treatment. My wife filed for divorce while I was in treatment. I had just opened a business that was about to fail, you know, because of my drinking. And I had like a whole bunch of stuff, you know, damaged right in front of me. That, you know, I mean, I had created, you know, a ton of wreckage, and my sisters weren't talking to me. It was the second parent. I couldn't be there for them, you know, to support them as a brother, second parent who passed away. So all I wanted to do is be in a place where I could say, I'm sorry, you know, like, please forgive me. You know, and fortunately, you know, because I had, you know, good sponsorship, and I have, you know, great sponsorship now. You know, I was guided along this path that, you know, I don't make amends until I know what I'm making amends for. And, you know, you hear all kinds of silly things in Alcoholics Anonymous, and some of them make a lot of sense. The steps are in order for a reason. And I had to understand what the nature of my problem was, because I went for almost 40 years drinking and doing some other, you know, outside issue substances. And I never understood what the true problem was. So, you know, John summed it up very well in terms of when I start drinking, I have no control over my drinking. When I'm stopped, I can't stay stopped. You know, and then there's this spiritual malady part. You know, I'm restless, irritable, discontent. I'm full of self-centered fear. You know, I have all this anxiety, and I have, you know, I have all these resentments, you know, and in the beginning, or at some point, my drinking was a solution for that, because I'd have, you know, I'd have a couple of drinks, which would lead to, you know, to more drinks. But at some point, you know, there'd be no anxiety, there'd be no fear. I'd feel comfortable. I was comfortable, you know, talking to anyone. But after a while, the drinking caused, you know, more damage than it was worth as a solution. And it no longer even worked as a solution. And I was in a really bad place. So I was really eager to get to the 9th step. And, you know, one of the things that I'll warn people about, if you're new, don't do the 9th step before you do, you know, the previous 8. I made that mistake. I tried to fix my marriage on step 3. And all I was doing was a really bad example of step 3, because I was running the show. I was trying to manipulate. And, you know, my ex-wife was able to see through that. You know, she didn't need a microscope to figure out what was going on there. So, you know, when we get to this paragraph, okay, it says now we need more action. So we've just come through steps 4 and 5 where we've made this drastic self-appraisal. We've done the inventory. The purpose of the inventory is for me to find my truth about the things in my life. So I have this list of things in my life that went wrong, and this one wronged me, and that one wronged me. And when I do a thorough 4th step, as it's outlined in the book, I get to see what my responsibility, my mistakes in that, and the part that I played in terms of setting myself up, like where I set the ball rolling. And, you know, I share that with someone else in step 5. And like John said, you know, a lot of the people, a lot of the harms will come out of, you know, steps 4 and 5. They'll come out of the inventory. So when I did this inventory, clearly there were people that I was harmed. But one of the things that I was asked to do when I went through the steps was, you know, look around the resentment or look around the damage and see who else was damaged. So I was married twice. My first wife, she ended up killing herself from this disease in 2013. We had been divorced by then, but I did a lot of damage in that marriage. And, you know, her family was affected by it in a very big way. And there were other people affected by it. And, you know, I owe amends, you know, or I, you know, had to make amends to people who were affected by this as well. You know, my job is to be as thorough as possible in cleaning this stuff up. Why? Okay. What are we looking to accomplish here? Okay. I'm looking to, you know, in step one, I find out what the problem is. And if I can see to my innermost self, you know, I've got this problem, you know, I'm screwed because I'm powerless and I can't fix this on my own. And there's no hope in step one. Step two tells me only a power greater than myself can restore me to sanity or help me. So all I have to do is be willing to believe that there's something bigger than me out there that can help solve my problem. In three, I'm making a decision really to go forward and do work, the work. There's more in there. But what I'm looking to do is establish a relationship with this higher power thing, you know, this spiritual way of life that can solve my problem. But I need to clear up the wreckage. So in four and five, I'm doing the self appraisal, and I have my sponsor with me, you know, helping me on that. In six and seven, I'm going to God, you know, and I'm asking God to help me be rid of these defects of character that have caused this damage. And in steps eight and nine, in eight, I'm making a list. Then in nine, I'm going out and repairing the damage. It's not just I'm sorry. It's where I get to explain what my wrongs were that I believe may have hurt them, okay? And then gives them the opportunity to fill in the blanks, because very often there are a whole bunch of blanks. There are things that I didn't see. I need to clear this stuff away, because I, as an alcoholic, cannot be living in a place of self-centered fear, guilt, and shame, and all of those negative feelings that go through my head that make me at some point want to say, what the hell, screw it, I'm just going to have a drink, even if it's not a conscious thought. I can't be living in that place. So this is, you know, steps four through seven are really the process of clearing away the things that are blocking me off from this higher power. And you know, nine, eight, and nine are very, very important part, because it's the first time in the steps where I'm actually going out to other people and repairing the damage. Up until then, it's a me program. Okay. I'm looking at my defects of character. I'm talking to God, but going out and actually doing something. Now, the purpose of the steps, and I'll wrap this up quickly and we could read a little bit more, but is so that I could be of maximum service to other people, to God and other people. Okay. I can't have this stuff weighing on me and be crossing the street and walking down different aisles at the market and stuff like that, you know, because I've done all this damage and I haven't made things right. So it's really important for me. And that was stressed early on. And it got stressed when I started working with Chris earlier this year. And he took me through the steps again. Okay. One of the couple of things that he say is he points out that step eight says all, you know, all people we have harmed. And it's really important that I don't pick and choose and say, okay, I want to make up with my ex-wife, you know, or my ex-girlfriend, but I'm going to ignore these other people, okay? All people that I've harmed. And then he also says, actually, you know, actually go out and do this stuff. So amends, it's always been drilled into me that the amends are a very important, you know, part of this program. You know, and the last thing it says, if you haven't the will to do this, we ask. And that's John said the prayer. When the book says ask, I'm asking God. But very powerfully, and I've heard Chris say this, you know, it's agreed at the beginning we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. And if I don't, you know, if I have a solid first step that tells me I have this terminal illness, okay, I'm going to be much more willing to go and clean this stuff up so I don't have to live this way. And I guess I will flip it back to the reader.
Wonderful. Thank you guys so much. And I think we're staying on page 76 for next reading. And I meant to do this in the beginning, just as a refresher. Step eight is made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Step nine is made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Page 76. Probably there are still some misgivings. As we look over the list of business acquaintances and friends we have hurt, we may feel diffident about going to some of them on a spiritual basis. Let us be reassured. To some people, we need not and probably should not emphasize the spiritual feature on our first approach. We might prejudice them. At the moment, we are trying to put our lives back in order. This is not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. It is seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustice to him and announce that we have gone religious. In the prize ring, this would be called leading with the chin. Why lay ourselves open to being branded fanatics or religious bores? We may kill a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message, but our man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. He is going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than in our talk of spiritual discoveries. John?
Thanks. I reflect back, you know, in early recovery when I was going through the amends process, and you know, I had some family stuff that was going on. You know, my wife was an active drunk. The reason I married her, she drank like me, so you know that was a problem. And you know, when I got clean and sober, and then when it came to the amends, you know, I mean, the only reason I wasn't out homeless and laying in the streets because I had her, a successful teacher of Martin County, you know, supporting my dead butt, if you will. And so, you know, I was lazy and I was intolerant. I was angry. You know, I used to start fights at home, start arguments just to go out and drink. And, you know, so I owed her a lot, you know, and the thing of it was, she, you know, she really didn't want to hear it. And, you know, Alan was talking about how, you know, we should consult our sponsors before we go out and do these amends, you know, which I didn't do at the time. I didn't really have a great sponsor. He was only sober a couple of years, and I'm not even sure if he was at the ninth step, you know. So on this, you know, in early recovery, I was kind of on my own, but, you know, like Chris said, the guardrails are wide, man, in the beginning. You know, the guardrails to the spiritual realm are wide. So there's room to make mistakes. So, you know, I go to her and, you know, and I tell her, for one, that, you know, I was going to AA, which she just absolutely hit the roof. You know, like I said, 9 out of 10 times, the unexpected happens. You know, what I'm expecting, that, well, you know, she's really going to be proud of me for stopping drinking. She went ballistic, and, you know, it didn't go well. And, you know, and that's, so I started, you know, and talk about leading with the chin, you know, so I start talking the spirituality of the program, and, you know, I've got God in my life and I want to bring God into your life. And she's like, get the hell away from me. You know? So what ended up happening is that we really grew. For the longer I stayed clean and sober and the longer I worked this program, the further and further, you know, we got apart and we were way in debt, man. She ran into like $50,000+ of credit card debt. So to make a long story short, 12 years later, fast forward, she files for divorce and she was cheating on me, right? And so I get this wicked resentment, I almost drank over it, man. That's it. The closest I ever came to drinking was that resentment. And so, you know, it's easy to but she's cheating on me, you don't understand. She's cheating on me and you know, she's drinking all the time, and you know, I wasn't, you know, I had to look, you know, at my side of the street, you know, where was I to blame? So I did an inventory with a newer sponsor. I've had 3 sponsors in my recovery. And this guy was Tim. He was a good guy, man. And, you know, we looked at this and, you know, I had to look at my side of the street. You know, where was I at fault? You know, and putting the other person, you know, putting her out of mind entirely. You know, I could have been more attentive. I could have paid more attention to her. I could have been more caring. You know, I could have been home more. You know, I was at meetings all the time and I couldn't find that balance. But home was so crazy with alcoholism, I really felt safe at AA, which is no excuse anyway. But anyway, it helped me see that I played a huge part in the, when I looked at my defects of character with Chris, as a matter of fact, when I recently went through this spiritual tune-up, that's this list of defects of character of a paragraph about like that. You know, I would have cheated on me too, I think. You know, I mean, what a horrible person to live with, man. You can't work with me. I'm too controlling, you know, I'm lazy. The list goes on and on. So anyway, to make a long story short, we get divorced. And, I go to her to make amends, you know, and I was resenting that. I was hating her, you know, and there's this part, you know, how do we go to the man or woman that we hated, right? So there's this thin line between love and hate. I'm still married to her, and we're going through this divorce. So right before the lawyers and everything got involved, I went upstairs, and again, I didn't consult my sponsor on what to do. So I just went up and I sat on the side of the bed. She was up there, you know, doing whatever she was doing. I forget. And, I grabbed her hand and I said, Carol, you know, I was really horrible the way I've treated you over the years. And I go, I really don't want to divorce. And I really want to work this out, you know, because I love you. And I really, you know, I'm more to blame than anybody in this thing. And I really want to try to make it right. And she, you know, 9 out of 10 times, the unexpected happens. She rips her hand away from mine. It's over, buddy. It is over. You know, so I said, okay, you know, and I said, well, you know, I put the broom, the whisk broom in my back pocket. My side of the street was as clean as I could make it. And, I got a lawyer and filed for divorce. And it kind of killed two birds with one stone here in this paragraph. You know, Owen, like I said, I owed $50,000, and it was a lot of money to pay back. And it's like you can never get out of that debt. So when I went to mediation, I told her, I told the judge, I said, look, you know, she's got half of my union pension. I'll leave her the house and, you know, the everything in it, the furniture, and, you know, I'm just going to walk away with the, you know, if I can, with my vehicles and you know, some fishing poles and my instruments, if that's all right. And the judge goes, you know what? Mrs. Sewage, if he's willing to do that, you can take the, you know, you can take the credit card debt. And she agreed to it. And I was like, wow. You know, so I went outside, and the lawyer's like, John, you're getting screwed. You're getting screwed. I said, let me tell you something honest about it. It really freed me up. The amends really freed me from the resentment. And, you know, by the grace of God, the weight, I mean, I don't know if you've ever been $50,000 in credit card debt, but the weight of that was, I was just walking on air, man. That's my amends story for that. And, like I said, that was my, you know, worst resentment I think I ever had was that one. And, you know, she passed away last a year ago, June. And when my daughter called me crying, telling me about it, you know, I felt nothing. I mean, absolutely nothing, you know. And like I said, I was going through the divorce. I used to pray for her for 2, almost 3 years. Like it says, you know, pray for her for 2 weeks, man. It took a couple of years of prayer to get past this. And when she died, I felt absolutely nothing. And I was telling Chris about it. I said, man, I'm like, what's wrong with me, man? Am I a psychopath? Am I a sociopath? I'm like, what is wrong with me? And you know, the wisdom of Chris, you know, Chris Schroeder, he just looks at me and goes, you know, we're on Zoom, right? Face to face in my Zoom room at the house here. And he goes, you know, John, he goes, maybe there just wasn't any unfinished business. And I was just like, and that was it, you know, and from that second, from that moment, I was really, really, really just as free as I could be from that trial and tribulation of my life. And I did everything I could do to try to save it. And then it just wasn't meant to be. And she died of alcoholism, which is, you know, to our newcomers, is the end result if we're unwilling to do the things that this program is asking us to do. You know, in steps one, you know, obviously step 9 we're at now, and of course 10, 11, and 12. But I'd like to throw it back to Alan. I just wanted to tell you that story because it kind of fits, I think. Back to you, Alan.
Thank you, John. Appreciate that. So, you know, in this paragraph, you know, it talks about like not going to people, you know, on a spiritual basis and going out, you know, I'm here to deepen my relationship with God. And I can humbly say that I don't think I've ever done that. You know, it says at the end of the paragraph, a man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. And he's going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than a talk about, you know, spiritual discoveries. And, you know, I had an outstanding amends for my first inventory. And again, when I started working with Chris, he said to me, he goes, do you have any unfinished amends? It was like, yeah, you know, and there was this one hanging out there, and it had to do with some kind of little drug deal back like 40 years ago in college, you know, and I kind of like owed this guy, I owed this guy money. And I reached out to him. He's down living down in Florida now. And I reached out to him and we had a really nice talk. And I said, you know, I have some unfinished business. And, you know, he asked me what was going on. And, you know, and I talked to him about it. Now, first of all, he didn't even remember. Okay. So I want to point out to the new people, you know, I live as an alcoholic in a place of self-centered fear. My sister's wedding, okay, my sister, she lives in Brooklyn. She married an Irish cop. They literally had the bagpipes, the Emerald Society there. Okay, everyone was drinking, but I was about as drunk as you could be and still standing up, okay? And I was messy, you know, and I was just, you know, and I remember that. And I avoided my sister and my brother-in-law for years and years and years, because I always thought, like, whenever I see them, they must be thinking, like, what a jerk this guy is, you know? And that was going on in my head for all these years. And when I finally made amends, and I had a whole bunch of other things, but that was one thing in particular that I made amends, you know, to them together, because it was at their wedding. You know, my sister said to me, it was my wedding day, you think I was paying attention to you? And my brother-in-law said, all my buddies were just as drunk. Do you think it really matters? And that self-centered fear, you know, that's my spiritual malady. That's that place where I spend a lot of time thinking about me. And if I don't go and clear these things up, what happens is I end up finding out the truth about these things. So the things I think about my past, okay, may not even be true. So I went to this guy that I thought I owed money to. And the way I remember it, of course, you know, he was not an alcoholic or using anything else at the time. So maybe he has a better memory than I do. He didn't remember it at all. And all he said to me is, he goes, Alan, he goes, if you want to, you know, make amends for maybe being a jerk once in a while, he goes, I'll accept that. He goes, you don't owe me any money. And this is something... I went to college, I went to Stony Brook almost 40 years ago, you know, that was on my mind and I couldn't get it off my mind. And we ended up, you know, having, you know, a great talk after that, and we're, you know, and we're friends. But, you know, he asked me like, what's going on? Why are you doing this? And, you know, and I told him that I'm in recovery, I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm looking to clean up my messes. I, you know, if people ask, you know, I can get into it a little bit deeper. What I believe doesn't necessarily have to come out in the conversation in terms of what my spiritual beliefs and about making things right. The only other thing I'm going to point out here is something that, you know, David shared with us on Friday. He said that, you know, hidden on every page, okay, is the point that we're supposed to be of service to other people. Okay, like that is what this program's all about. And I used to call it the dirty little secret of the book. You know, because I know when I went through it, even the first time with a sponsor, I wasn't looking to be this person to be of, you know, of maximum service and helping people. I came in broken and I wanted to be fixed. Like, what could you guys all do for me? So, you know, that had to be pointed out to me, you know, and now when I go through the book and when I take people through the book, you know, that is clear. Like, that is what this is all about. And, you know, in the spiritual realm, everything is paradoxical. It's counterintuitive. It's all backwards. Okay. I got to give it to get it, not to keep it, but to get it. I have to, you know, make things, I have to give people their freedom in the ninth step. Okay. In order to get my ninth step promises, you know, I guess next week you guys will be talking about the promises. But in a nutshell, it's like, you know, we'll comprehend a new, you know, a new freedom and a new happiness and all this stuff. You know, feelings of uselessness will disappear. Well, let me tell you something. My family felt damn useless trying to get me sober, okay, for a couple of decades. They were full of fear when the phone rang, you know, past 11 o'clock at night, if it was, you know, 12, 1, 2 in the morning, that it was going to be an emergency room, the cops, you know, or the morgue, really. You know, so what happens is we free people when we make things right with them. And that's where I get my freedom. And I, you know, on the next paragraph, I got a little bit of a story about an amends. So I'm just going to go back to the passage here, the reading. Thanks.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much. And we're going to be moving on page 77. We don't use this as an excuse for shying away from the subject of God. When it will serve any good purpose, we are willing to announce our convictions with tact and common sense. The question of how to approach the man we hated will arise. It may be he has done us more harm than we have done him, and though we may have acquired a better attitude toward him, we're still not too keen about admitting our faults. Nevertheless, with the person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. It is harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. We go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feeling and expressing our regret.
Okay, that's a great paragraph, man. And of course, you know, one of the newer amends, if you will, you know, sometimes my list just does not seem to go away. But let me fast forward from where I was at to where I'm at today. And at 23 years sober, you know, things were going really good in recovery. And, you know, I made the selfish decision because of some gossip in the rooms to, you know, start shying away and stop going to my home group and stop going to AA in general. And, you know, I was, there was a halfway house that was supplying me with all kinds of newcomers, man. And we had this big book study going, and two of my sponsors would drive a pickup truck with all kinds of, sometimes there'd be 30 kids, sometimes there was just five or six, but it was this endless procession of sots that was in my life. And you know, by the grace of God of this programming, I was really in a good spiritual space. And I did this big book workshop with Chris over in Tampa, Florida. You know, and he's like, yeah, come on, dude, this way. I never even been to a workshop, you know what I mean, other than big book studies, you know, in Titusville, Florida or Stewart. And so I get, you know, I get there and I hadn't seen him in probably 20 some years, I think. And, you know, I said, so I got to talking to someone, man. I said, Chris, what are we doing? You want to speak for an hour? He goes, oh, man, it's 8 hours. I said, 8 hours? I'm like, how am I going to speak for 8 hours? But we get through it, right? And it was awesome. And, you know, when that was over, you know, all of a sudden I get back home and there's this gossip going around the rooms now. You know, so of course, you know, my hypersensitivity, you know, my reaction was, well, I'm just going to stop going in there. I'll just help the newcomers. And, you know, I'll stay outside at the picnic table outside the rooms. And as fate would have it, you know, the halfway house shuts down because the guy relapses and everybody gets kicked out, right? So, you know, all of a sudden my world shrinks. And I had to go to an AA meeting for 5 years, and which is a long time. And what happens is, any kind of spirituality that you have acquired, you know, unravels and everything just starts working backwards. And next thing you know, I'm just covered up in the devilments, you know, pain, you know, misery and you know, untreated alcoholism, I'm angry. So anyway, I bought a house. To make a long story short, it's a long ass story. To make a long story short, buy this house and it's a dirt farm. There's no grass. There's trees and dirt, and that's it, sugar sand. And the guy next door is like, really, he's got a really nice place. And the first time I met him, he goes, this is mine. He puts his hand on the fence. This is mine. That's mine. And that's yours. You know, I'm like, okay, buddy. So, you know, restrain the tongue and pen. I didn't react. And, you know, he was like, just real, you know, real arrogant about how it was. So, you know, I had plans for this home because I had lost my home years ago with Carol. So finally, you know, 25, 26 years later, I finally get another home and I start sodding and I start putting sprinkler system in, sodding, landscape, shrubs, you know, and he's like, oh, you know, you're making me look bad. And I'm like, oh no, man, I'm not trying to make you look bad, man. I'm just trying to, you know, make everything just nice around here. But inside, I'm like, you're right, MF, I'm trying to make you look bad. You know, that's, you know, my disease is talking. And so, you know, a lot of things push kept coming to shove and I kept not saying anything and strained a tongue and pen. And finally, one day, man, he just caught me at a bad time when the hemorrhoids were flared up and I was just as angry could be, man. And I let him have it, right? And man, I couldn't sleep and I'm trying to justify this. And this went on for about 6 months where I'm just stewing in this resentment. And every time I see him, I just can't stand him. You know, and it finally got so bad, man, that I had to go to him, you know, and I told him, you know, I came up to him and I said, Richard, I said, what I said in my backyard was wrong, man. I said, I had no right to talk to you like that. And I go, I'm asking you for your forgiveness, you know, and this is a guy I couldn't stand. But, you know, the pain and that suffering outweighed, you know, whatever it was that was keeping me from doing this. And when I got with Chris, you know, in this spiritual tune-up, if you will, and, you know, doing another fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, and ninth, you know, the neighbor was on the list, you know, and I told him that, you know, I went back to him again, you know, to make sure that I, because there was still like, there was some resentment there, you know, and I prayed for him, like, you know, you got to pray for him, sick person like me, save me from being angry, Father, and, I went to him again, and I even got more dramatic with the amends. You know, I said, man, I said, Richard, I said, you and Eva are the best neighbors anybody could ever want. And I go, man, I just really want you to know I'm really glad to be your neighbor, and I'm really, really sorry for what I had said that was so wrong of me, and I just hope you forgive me. And he's like, oh, yeah, forget about it. You know, and the beautiful thing about it now is, you know, we'll stand at the bottom of the driveway. I talked to him for like almost an hour the other day, you know, and yard wars is like over. You know, I used to be out there at the crack of dawn to make sure I was the first guy out. I was the first one out there picking up leaves and, you know, grooming the place. And, you know, I just wanted to beat him to the punch every time, you know, and now, you know, it's because of this program and this amends process, you know, I am free of that bondage, man. And, you know, I don't have to act like that anymore. And like I say, it's 7:43. That's how I went to the man, you know, that I hated. And, you know, the result was just like, it's beautiful, man. You know, I don't have to live like that anymore. And I'll turn it back over to Alan. Man, he's got such great stuff to say. I don't want to short him on any time for sure.
Don't worry about it, John. Thank you. You know, the man we hate, you know, there aren't many people I can think that I really hate, but there are some people like I really, really disliked, like really disliked on my inventory. And I'm going to give you a story, because this really, like when I looked at this, it was like, I have to tell this little story. This was actually a 10th step amend, but it's the same thing. I had to make amends in the same form that I do a 9th step amends. So I'm at an AA meeting. This is, you know, I have a little over, let's say maybe 2 years or so. And, you know, I've been through the steps and sponsoring a ton of guys. And of course I have all the answers, right? Because I'm at that stage where, you know, I'm like, I know, you know, like I know my AA stuff, right? And if you're not doing it the way I'm doing it, you're not doing it right, right? And there's this young kid, you know, just come out of treatment. And he's one of these typical, you know, with like a rich father, and the guy's driving the same BMW as me. And I'm getting notes on my windshield, like in the windshield wipers, from this girl. He's 13 stepping in the meeting, and she thinks my car is his guy. And it's just, it's really like a whole big cluster, right? So one night at my home group, the guy's there, and I, for some reason, I thought he was in service. I was an intergroup rep at the time. And I said to him, hey, so-and-so, are you going to be at intergroup tomorrow? And his answer was, I'd rather stick a needle in my arm than do that crap. Okay. Well, you know, I went off on him, you know. I went off on him and I said, and I'm being nice about how I'm saying it now, you know, with that attitude, you probably will have a needle in your arm, whatever. And I ended up walking away, and then I came back. Okay. And I got him with more stuff. And it was like, I walked away and it was like, you know, there was no time for 10, like there was no pause. There was no time for a 10 step. And I left that meeting, I left that room. Okay. Feeling very right, very righteous, very self-righteous. And on the way home, I called my sponsor, you know, and he had said to me, well, he didn't particularly like this guy either. Okay. But we decided I was going to inventory it. And what happened was I did some inventory on it. And, you know, the interesting thing about which says, you know, the man we hate, when you actually do inventory, part of the process that I was taught when I first came in was that little sick man prayer or angry man prayer that's at the bottom of 66 and 67 that says, though we didn't like his actions and the way these disturbed us, me, right? They, like ourselves, like me, are sick too. And I was encouraged when I'm writing inventory to look and say, well, where did I do the same thing as he does? You know, where have I done that same thing? And if I can find, which is always, where I've done the same thing, you know, in one form or another, I either have to suspend judgment on him or have to look at myself in the same light, you know? So what happens is it like an evening out process. And I realized when I did inventory, you know, I was this guy a number of years before. You know, I was, when I came into rooms in 2001, I didn't do any work. I didn't do any steps. You know, I really didn't do any service. And I was doing the same. I was hooking up, you know, I was hooking up in my first year. I was getting relief, you know, where I could find relief as opposed to getting the freedom that the program offers. And here's the thing. No one could have told me otherwise because they did. They tried. And I needed my process, and I probably even needed my relapse, okay, to wake up to the fact that I'm truly powerless over alcohol, that my life is unmanageable, and without a spiritual solution, you know, I'm a walking dead man. But no one could have told me that. And I realized I've got to make amends to this guy. And I went to him, and it took me a while to find him because he wasn't going to the same meetings afterwards, you know, surprise, right? And, you know, and when I found him, I was really humble. I apologized and I said, you know what? I shouldn't have talked to you. I was arrogant. I was, you know, being like Mr. Know-it-all. And the beautiful thing about making amends to people that we dislike, it instills some sense of humility. Like it's humbling. It's more humbling to make amends to people that we dislike than to people that we like. Yeah, I want everything with my sisters to get back together. You know, I want everything with, you know, my fiance to be, you know, that stuff makes sense, right? Like, because there's something there. But like, if I dislike someone and I'm going there and admitting, you know, the nature of my wrongs and saying, you know, I did the same thing as you. And I really, you know, and I further said, because it says we go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill will. I went to him and I said, you know what? I am not, this has not been an example of what Alcoholics Anonymous is supposed to be. Okay. And I don't want to be, you know, I don't want my actions to be chasing anyone out of the rooms, you know, and I have to constantly, like, I have to continue working this process. Okay. Because the biggest threat to my sobriety is not the end of a relationship, or it's not the loss, you know, the death of someone, you know, in the family, the biggest threat to my sobriety is going to be my ego. It's going to be to the point where I get too big. I think I've got it. I forget that God, you know, I'm living in God's grace right now. Okay. And that, you know, I have a job to do here. And when I start getting too big in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's just as bad as being out there and being, you know, being crazy. So that's my take on, you know, on the man we hate. It's a lot more humbling, and I'll pass it back.
Thank you guys so much. Gonna move on. We're running a little short on time. So I think I'm gonna skip over the next paragraph because I think you guys covered that pretty nicely. I'm gonna read the last two paragraphs and give you each 3 or 4 minutes to wrap up if you would. Page 78, most alcoholics owe money. We do not dodge our creditors. Telling them what we are trying to do, we make no bones about our drinking. They usually know it anyway, whether we think so or not. Nor are we afraid of disclosing our alcoholism on the theory it may cause financial harm. Approached in this way, the most ruthless creditor will sometimes surprise us. Arranging the best deal we can, we let these people know we are sorry. Our drinking has made us slow to pay. We must lose our fear of creditors no matter how far we have to go, for we are liable to drink if we are afraid to face them. And on page 79, although these reparations take innumerable forms, there are some general principles which we find guiding. Reminding ourselves that we have decided to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience, we ask that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. We may lose our position or reputation or face jail, but we're willing. We have to be. We must not shrink at anything. John?
Okay, I know we're running short on time. It's got 4 minutes. You know, I chose relief instead of freedom. You know, David said that Friday, you know, and that was me, man. You know, I was the half measure guy. You know, I was the guy that, you know, I balked on a lot of amends, and I sat on one since 1981, the summer of 81. And I owed this guy some money. What happened was I come back from Colorado. I spent $2,000 in a month, you know, snorting cocaine and drinking. I come back with no job. The girlfriend had left, and, you know, I called him from Clarksburg at the Greyhound bus station. I had $10 in my pocket when I left Aspen, Colorado, and $0 when I got to Clarksburg, West Virginia. And he picks me up, and he goes, "Man, you look bad, John." I said, "Man," I told him what I was doing. He goes, "I said, I don't have any money, Jimmy. I don't have a job. What am I going to do?" He goes, "I just opened a bar, man." He goes, "Look, you can run the college bar for me." So he gives him his job. And had a really great night. And to make it quick, man, I stole $50 from this guy. And, you know, a friend that I knew for a long time. And I was scared to death to make amends to him, man. And it was one of the things when I was away from AA that was just eating me alive, man. And after a while, you know, like, say, 40 some odd years later, there's nowhere for this resentment to go except, you know, to do the right thing. And, you know, when I hooked up with Chris and I told him about it, you know, he's like, "Yeah, man, you got to clean this up." So, you know, I had plenty of opportunities over the year to make this amends. And I went down to Stuart, Florida. I called him. I consulted with Chris. I called him up and made an appointment. And I didn't tell him why I was coming down. I said, "I got something for you, Jimmy. How you been doing, man? I just want to see. I got something for you." And, you know, so he invited me down, and I went down in the morning and sat outside the automatic gate. And it gave me time to pray. So that's, you know, that's what I'm supposed to do. Make the appointment, consult with my sponsor, and then bring God into it. And we sat in the house, and, you know, I came clean with him, man. We were in there. I sat there till noon. I got there at 8 o'clock. We were there for 4 hours. And, you know, like I said, again, 9 out of 10 times, the unexpected happens, you know. And, you know, he took the money, and, you know, I was crying. He was crying. I gave him a big hug, you know, because I just felt so horrible about it. And he sits down, and the unexpected happened. He goes, "Look, John," he goes, "all these years, man, He goes, anytime I ever asked you for anything, you were always there to help me with building a dock or, you know, repairing the house and, you know, fixing the truck. And he goes, you never asked for a dime, you know, and I'm shutting up and listening, you know. He goes, now look, he goes, he takes the $300 because that's what it was in 2020 money. $50 turned into $300. He goes, I want you to take it. He goes, you don't understand. You have to. I said, I can't, Jimmy. I go, you gotta keep it. And he's like, look, you got a charity. I said, AA is my charity. And he wasn't too keen on that. So my wife is has a hobby as a seamstress. She makes the COVID masks for disability people. And you know, I said, look, man, he goes, well, how about Susan? Could she use it? I said, you know what? She needs a new sewing machine, man. I go, how's that sound? He goes, and that's what he wanted me to do. You know, when I told Chris that, Chris goes, well, what did he want you to do? I said, he wants me to give it to Susan to buy a sewing machine. I said, he goes, and that's what you do. And man, I left that place feeling lighter than air, man. And like I said, why I balked so long is because, you know, my head's telling me I'm going to get my ass kicked. You know, this guy was a badass dude, man. I didn't want to mess with him at all. So it's 5-2, and I'll kick it back to Alan. I thank you for having us. I'm sorry, Alan, it took too much time.
Love you, John. Thanks. I actually met John through the COVID situation, you know, on Zoom, and I love him. He's become a good buddy, and it's actually been a blessing during this period of time. So the paragraph that I'm going to just mention very quickly is, it says, although these reparations take innumerable forms, there are some general principles which we find guiding. And then it goes into talk about us being, you know, hard on ourselves, that we're willing to go to any lengths, and that we ask God, you know, for direction. So I was always told, you know, that when it comes to amends, you know, you pray and meditate, you know, and then check it by your sponsor. Okay. Cause I could do a lot of, you know, I get that voice in my head that says, you know, and I can make a lot of mistakes, but it says, you know, we may lose our position or reputation. I've never lost my position. But this reminded me about that Sandy Beach works, one of the Sandy Beach workshops. And I just sent John these. And one of his talks, he talks about this prayer that says, God, please take away my reputation. And I think that speaks to that ego thing, you know, because one of the problems that I've had with amends, and this is, you know, even recently, and this is a mental problem, so I just do the actions anyway. But it's sort of like, if I admit I'm wrong, you'll know I'm wrong. You know, I've spent all of this time convincing myself that I'm right. And I'm sure in some place in your mind, you might even agree with me that I'm right. So if I go to you and say I'm wrong, okay, then you're going to know I'm wrong. Okay. That's the same mentality as, like, if I go into treatment, you will know I have a problem with alcohol. And the only one who didn't know I had a problem with alcohol when I went into treatment was me. Everyone knew. So, you know, when it comes to this, okay, I'm going to go, like, you know, with the name of your group, there are some simple actions that, you know, that I take that's outlined in this book, and I don't think about them because my thinking is the problem. So if I'm supposed to do something, you know, myself will make up a whole bunch of stories about it. So I'm going to end by saying I'm grateful to be here tonight. Thank you, you know, Simple Actions, and, you know, and the people here. Thanks, John, for including me in this. I really enjoy this. This is our second gig that we did together. And grateful to be here tonight. Thank you all.
Thank you guys so much. That was a super fast hour. Really appreciate it. And I'm going to encourage everyone to stick around after the Lord's Prayer. We're going to give you a chance to unmute if you'd like to thank the speakers. And the seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. At this time, are there any AA-related announcements? Grant, I see your hand is raised. Do you have an announcement? I'll take that to be a no.
Real quick, I just posted a meeting that's starting in January. It's a Mid-Atlantic group. They're going to be a speaker format and participation, half and half. And all the information's in the chat. If you have any questions, hit me up after the meeting.
Thanks, Grant. Alan, I saw you waving. Did you have an announcement? No. Okay, dokie. All right, moving on.
Yeah, just waving friends.
Oh, okay. Awesome. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, can I get you to raise your hands? Thank you. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to any of us, or if you're shy, feel free to send an email to info@simpleactions.net. In closing, can we thank our speakers one more time? And thank you to all who participated. As I said, I will unmute everyone after the Lord's Prayer, give you a chance to say thank you to John and Alan. And tonight I have asked Debbie to read page 164, A Vision for You. I'll put that on the screen for you.
I'm an alcoholic and my name's Debbie. And this is 164 from A Vision for You in our big book. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you.
Thanks, Debbie. And for those who care to join, I am going to close the meeting with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Thank you guys again so much. It was a really, really good meeting.
Thanks, John.
That was awesome. John, Alan, thank you.
Thank
guys.
You. John, thanks, Alan.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us. Guys.
Thank you so much.
Great job, John. Alan, awesome.
Hey, Kurt.
Thanks. Hey, Kurt.
Great job.
Thank you, John and Alan.
Yeah. Thank you, Laura.
Thank you.
Yeah, you guys did a great job. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jared.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, John and Alan.
We'll see you in a few minutes.
Yeah. I'll see you guys at 8:30. I'm just jumping.